Hey, it's great having you here at Crossroads. My name is Brian, the pastor here, and it's great to be able to have you on Labor Day weekend along with me who couldn't leave for the weekend. Wonderful. We're looking today at what it means to have God's transcendent values of commitment and how that collides with our lives. That song talked about really, really well. We could have had something, but there was something that was shattered. It was gone. We're looking at today how the earthly value of commitment or the heavenly value of commitment as God has collides with our commitments that we have today. Well, we've made a lot of commitments around here. We're making commitments to be a blessing to people, to reach people, because we want as many people as possible to be united or reunited with their Creator. And it's why we are starting different sites all around the Cincinnati region. We have a site of Crossroads in Oakley, a site in Mason, and not too far off, we will start a site in Florence. And last week, we had a groundbreaking celebration. And if you weren't there, or if you were there, let's revisit that right now.
Let us be your hands, let us be your feet, let us be the ones that run to those in need.
You know, Turner Construction, other companies, there's not a lot of construction work around the region right now. Around the world, there isn't a lot, but there is in this little corner of the Cincinnati region because of our faithfulness, because our strength and our courage, we stood up and said, no, we're going forward. We're going forward and we're trying to reach more people and bless more people. And that's what multi-site is about. It's about going to where people are to reach and bless them. Jesus went to where we were. He came into our neighborhood. We come and dwell in the neighborhood of Northern Kentucky. We come and we cross the barriers of division. We come across a river and we actually say we want prosperity to come here. And not only just to start a new thing here in Northern Kentucky, we want to be a prosperous thing where we're united. We have locations in Mason, in Oakley, in Northern Kentucky, and more to come because we want the body of Christ to be one. We want to have a cohesive team that is a blessing to people in South Africa, people in India, people in poverty here in our city.
Hi, my name is Terry, and I am excited to be here with you. I am going to be the campus pastor of this site, so a lot of my role will be making sure that we do a good job of bringing the best of Crossroads to Northern Kentucky. Specifically, what this site means to me is that my family is going to have a place where literally it's going to be 5 minutes from our house, and we're excited to be able to invite our friends, to be able to invite our neighbors, and just know that they're going to have a place where driving 30 minutes is no longer an excuse.
We went on the Game Change campaign, and one of the things we were really excited about was the multi-site, and the fact that it came to Florence in our backyard is just something that really excited my wife and I. We have so many friends and neighbors who have inquired about Crossroads and coming to church with us, but not too many of them wanted to make that trek across the river.
I've been trying to get the guys I work with to come to Oakley for years, and they just won't come. And now that we're right around the corner, I'm really excited about this.
I walked in this building, and you see a bunch of just white walls. The thing I was excited about mostly is that I could be here for the beginning to write people's names on the walls that I wanted to see their life change.
We wrote two separate prayers on the wall, and an amazing thing was we both wrote down the same names.
It is like deja vu in here because this is exactly what it felt like when we went into the original Oakley building. Big cavernous thing, construction, trenches, and excitement as people have been writing prayers on walls of people they're praying for and of things that they're going to do to honor God. It's been an amazing, amazing journey, and the best days are yet to come.
So let your light shine through us, and let your love flow through us. Forgive us in your open arms, for your love has...
Awesomeness. Awesomeness. Well, you might have noticed there was a guy on that video who had a little title underneath him. It said Campus Pastor. Campus pastors are people who are at the different sites who are responsible to make sure that the spiritual, logistical, and pastoral needs are being met by people who are at that site. Our campus pastor in Mason is Mark Stetcher, and our campus pastor in Florence is going to be a guy who's been around here for quite some time. He's responsible for our Whiz Kids program. If you've ever gone go New Orleans, you know this man who's been intricately involved there, as well as Go Mamelodi. Please welcome the campus pastor of Florence, Terry Phillips. Man, well, Terry, how do you feel about this big transition?
You know, there are kind of two things that I think God's teaching me, and I think a lot of our community is feeling this. It's about change, and it's about an excitement during that change. And, you know, just some of my story is that about 4 months ago, when Brian, you said, hey, you know what, we'd like to consider you to have this role as campus pastor, or actually, I think you said, I'm going to fire you, or
yes,
you can take this.
That's the way you can
your
keep
choice.
Getting a paycheck.
Yeah, whatever
right,
you'd like to do, way. Right? So when I had this opportunity, we were just really, really excited and said, we're in. And you know what? We're not just going to drive down there. We're going to move to Florence. And so we decided to put our house on the market. And we're thinking, this is a really crappy time to be doing this. And in 8 days, we were under contract to sell our house. Mm. We're just like, man, yeah. And so all of a sudden, with that blessing, we're like, oh, crap, now we got to find a house because they want immediate occupancy. And sure enough, we went out. The first night we went out, we literally found the perfect house. It was ready to move into, and we set it up so that we closed on our old house in the morning. We closed on the new house late morning, and we literally moved in that afternoon. It's been
crazy.
Great.
Crazy.
And some other stuff we're excited about. We're excited about the community and how welcoming they've been. We had 600 people show up at that groundbreaking event that you saw.
It was an amazing day, and I was amazed by how many people actually wore shoes to that event. It was really, really stunning to me.
We are an equal opportunity offender.
Equal opportunity offenders.
Florence,
everybody gets it. Come on.
Be ready for a lot more of that.
It's a sign of love, yes.
Yep. And so, you know, and another thing, we are talking through our launch date for Crossroads Florence, and it looks like we should be in that building. We want to start services on August 19th. And so we've got a little less than a year of planning for that. And if you want to hear more about what we are doing with Multisite, if you want to hear more about what we are doing with CityLink, our work in India.
Or why August 19th? What's the rationale behind that? Yep. All of these things we're going to give behind the scene details.
At our Game Change update meeting. And so Game Change is this 3-year campaign that we are in the midst of. And whether you have been faithfully a part of that, whether this is something new where you're like, I don't even know what Game Change is, we want you to come out to the Game Change update meeting. It's on September 12th at 7 p.m. here at Crossroads Oak.
We emailed invitations to people who made commitments to Game Change above and beyond regular giving for 3 years. But we also want everyone engaged here. Maybe you're newer to Crossroads, you weren't around during Game Change. Maybe for whatever reason, you didn't make a commitment. We want to all be on this journey and be filled with the understanding of what God's doing in us and some of the behind-the-scenes details that are really important. So that night should be informative and hopefully inspirational as well.
Yeah. Another big thing we have going on here is in the middle of October, we are going to start our next all-church journey called the Strong Challenge. And is anyone excited about our next journey coming up?
I am.
Yes.
I am.
So what are you excited about, Brian?
Well, this is the most important thing we do every year at Crossroads. And if you're around for less than a year, you don't realize that, but it is. And I'm also excited that I've been through all these journeys. And this one's going to be special. I'm already thinking through who is it that I can invite that might want to be engaged with us. There's some people I know who are really into the physical workout thing, and they don't go to Crossroads. I'm thinking they might get their first spiritual workout. And by the way, even if you're not into physically working out, this is going to be a great concept. You're going to love this. It's going to be great.
Yep. So when we say all church journey, what we're referring to is we have a 6-week period where we take a certain topic and we all focus and go through that together. And the way that plays out is we will have our best messages on the weekend for that 6 weeks. You will then be challenged to go out individually and actually do these different challenges we've designed for you. And then lastly, we will get you together in what are called home teams. And home teams are a group of 6 to 12 people where you meet, you have a chance to really do life with other people, talk about your challenges, and hopefully challenge each other to grow and get the most out of this. And as a part of this, we need 2,100 people to help host this thing. That is a lot of people, so we need people to step up, and the requirements for that are we need, one, for you to have a place for people to meet, and that can be in your house, it can be in your apartment, it could be a Starbucks, so we need you to have a place, and we need you to have a pulse for this, or just a pulse period. And so we've tried to make the bar as low as possible. And I just want to say, I want to challenge people to go out there and do that. I hope that we have people that are excited about it. I hope people are going to rush to sign up. Every year, people kind of sign up at the last second. We're like, oh, are we going to have enough hosts? I hope this is the first year where people run to sign up. And I think hosts are going to get the most out of this
journey. I agree entirely.
Yep. And then the last thing that we have to share with you before we get into more is that this is time where we're going to start recruiting for WizKids. And if anyone doesn't know about WizKids, it is this fantastic program where we pair caring adults with at-risk kids, kids that tend to be in poverty, kids that tend to be struggling with grades, and we see amazing things when that happen. And Brian, I know you've talked about WizKids a lot from stage. Anything you want to share about WizKids?
I love it. It's one of the things that, as Crossroads continues to grow, to have more of an impact on our city and be a blessing to our city. It's one of the actual reminders that people at Crossroads care and we're having an impact on our city. And we actually have a video for it because we're ready to get some more tutors, mentors for the next run for that. And you're going to be out. You're not going to be doing that any longer. But we're thankful for all you've done at WizKids and thankful for what you're going to be doing on behalf of all of us in Florence. Let's thank Terry. Great, great, great stuff, brother. Great, awesome. Well, we're going to see some of the things that's happening in WizKids. And while we do that, we're going to have volunteers come forward with little bags for anybody who wants to be generous. We want to be generous around here because I want God's values to be not only in me, I want God's values to be in and through the entire church that I'm a part of. And God is generous to us, and anybody who's wedded to Him is growing in generosity. And this is a video that reminds us that this giving that we do, whether it's electronically or whether it's from a bag that comes down, isn't just mirroring His values, but it's also propelling people to actually have lives that are different, that are more positively impacted. So this is a reminder for what our giving has done in the infrastructure for change that's supported here in this room, across our city, and across the world. If you're newer today, no worries. We're glad to be generous to you. Hope you grow today. Let's take a look at this.
WizKids is the most wonderful program. I've always looked for something in some way to give back to the community and to give back to younger people because I thought about how I was a child and there was someone there to mentor me and to just help me along the way.
You know, school wasn't my forte. So I thought, you know, helping the kids out with math and things like that kind of made me feel like, okay, can I do this? But it's been great. I think the kids just love having an adult figure around that just takes interest in them.
When I was little, my parents were at home a lot and we were with sitters and no one really cared if we got our schoolwork done. I wanted to reach out to a child like me and try to build into his or her life. And with Haley, I found that we both work with each other well.
The favorite thing I like at WizKids is that I get to talk to Ben and hang out.
Best part is about my favorite tutor in the world teaching me stuff that I don't know yet and struggling with in class.
Other than just making a great friend out of this, you know, I felt like I was able to show T what it's like to be loved by somebody that's not from your family.
My favorite part of tutoring is seeing Tricia and coming up with fun ways to teach and to help her learn what she's doing. And the impact that I see is she's developing in her reading skills and we have become good friends and we just have a lot of fun learning together.
I've seen James grow over the last 2 years, developing math, reading skills, connect with his friends.
My WizKid is Luke. When we first started out, he was very quiet and didn't share a whole lot, but Luke actually, after the first week, he enjoyed it so much, he was the one that reminded his mom that WizKids was the next Monday.
I feel like Joseph's work has been progressing a lot. He started out kind of weak, I'm not gonna lie, but he's reading higher level books now, and his math is doing a lot better.
I see the big change in my grades. I went from a C average to about an A or B average.
My favorite thing about WizKids is the math and of course the desserts.
It is like a fun place to be at with my tutor. They be feeding us good food?
We try to plan a nutritious meal for the kids. We feed about 130 kids each week and about 200 volunteers. We assemble it all in an hour and a half. The kids love it. It's one of the reasons they come. They come for tutoring, but they also come for a good meal.
Wow, that tastes real good. They know how to cook. They know how to serve. Everybody nice to you. They will give you good dinner. It seemed like you're just waking up from a dream that you always dreamed of. My grades at school might improve more better too.
I think he's gotten better at reading, definitely. He's more confident, I think.
Yeah, duh.
Yeah.
You meet good people and you learn new stuff every day and you never stop learning.
WizKids has been a tremendous benefit to our kids. I've seen a big improvement in their self-esteem, their work completion. I think just having a better, more positive outlook on their day and life in general. So it's been a great impact on my kids in a positive way.
And all of us have something to give.
I just can't help but get emotional every time I've seen it. I've seen that 6-7 times this weekend. Amazing the impact that you can have on somebody. One of the things I love about that is I love seeing the men who've made commitments to build into a younger boy. Love that. Amazing. In fact, I love all the commitments that are done by men, women, tutors, support people for multi-months to enable somebody to have a shot that they may not have had there not been somebody made a commitment to them. That's what we're talking about today. We're actually talking about the highest form of human commitment that you can make. This is the commitment of when a man or a woman says, I do, and I will be with you, and I will marry you. And let's just pray before we do anything else. God, I ask that you would help us to understand you, your truth, and understand our life situation today. Help us to know where to go from here, and help us to know the depths of your character, the amazing quality you have of fulfilling your vows. Help us to be more like you. I pray these things in your name, Jesus. Amen. Is it me or is it raining outside? Yeah. Well, I did a lot of fun things this last summer. I did a trip to Alaska and back. I'm going to talk about that a little bit next week. I actually did a deeper dive on it at the last Wednesday service a couple days ago. If you're curious about that, you can go to crossroads.net and take a look at that. But the first thing I did that was interesting over the summer was I went back to Pittsburgh, where I was born and bred, and I went to my parents' 50th wedding anniversary. 50 years. I actually think that the 50th wedding anniversary is a celebration that's on its way to extinction, or at least the endangered list. I mean, very rarely are people celebrating or going to be celebrating 50th wedding anniversaries, in part because we get married later, and that's great, and that's probably a good idea in many situations. And unfortunately, as we all know, 1 out of 2 new marriages ends in divorce. So the 50th wedding anniversary is a party that's happening less and less. It's very, very rare. I want to tell you who I'm focusing on today. Hopefully all of us are going to learn something today and find something of value to our life. But I specifically am thinking through and targeting and trying to help people who are married and are considering or on the verge of divorce. That's who I'm thinking about today. People who are married and considering or on the verge of divorce. If I was speaking just to those of us who have been through a divorce, I would say things differently and have different things to talk about. If I was speaking to those of us who are purely single and will always be single, I would have something different to say about this. But I'm talking about those of us who are considering privately or even publicly being on the verge of a divorce. All of us have some value in marriage. In fact, all people in all time periods, in all areas of the world, have had the marriage ceremony or the idea of a man and woman coming together forever. It's foundational to our understanding as human beings. And part of that is because it's foundational to what God does in planting this in all of our hearts. One of the greatest arguments for the existence of God is how do we account for the similar value systems of all people, regardless of their religious or spiritual persuasion? No matter what you believe about who God is or isn't, all people believe things like you shouldn't murder somebody in cold blood. All people believe that it's cowardice to run from the front line of battle. And the argument goes that we have sort of transcendent common values because God has created us in His image and He plants these things in us. That's the way we can account for similar value systems. And similarly, every society believes in marriage. A man and a woman being together, trying to commit for the rest of their life. It's bedrock. All of us believe that poverty should be ended. All of us believe that healthiness is good, although we don't want to do healthy necessarily. We want to be healthy. And similarly, all of us have a need and a desire to value marriage. Nobody would argue with marriage. Even people living together, they don't want to eliminate marriage. They just want to downplay the ceremony. Gays and lesbians don't want to eliminate marriage, just want to expand the definition of who can be married. Polygamists don't want to eliminate marriage, just want to increase the number of wives in marriage. Swingers don't want to eliminate marriage, just want to increase the number of partners. And married people don't want to eliminate marriage, just they want to eliminate their spouse too often. They want that person to be away and gone. See, we keep trying to change and morph and clue, but at its base, understand, marriage was invented by God. It's put into our hearts, and that's why we are drawn to it. So three big ideas. Number one, marriage is holy. Marriage is holy. When I say holy, I'm not meaning pure or goody-two-shoes. I'm meaning holiness in the sense that it's different. It's distinct. It's high. It's exalted. One of the things that's said about God in the Bible is that God is holy, holy, holy is the Lord God Almighty. That comes from the book of Isaiah, chapter 6. In the ancient Hebrew, there's no suffix to put on the end of a word to denote increase and value. There's no such thing as being able to say holier or holiest. So the way that they emphasize something is to repeat the word at most three times. And it's the only value of God that's used three times. He's holy, 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 meaning He's different. He's distinct. He's set apart. He's into and of a category utterly unto Himself. Similarly, marriage is holy. It's different. It's distinct. It's not BFF, best friends forever. It's not a deep dating, loving relationship. It's not a business partnership. It's not a joint agreement. There's elements of those things that maybe you play in a marriage, but no, when a man and a woman looks each other in the eyes and says before everybody, with you, I'm committed the rest of my life, this I solemnly vow, it creates a union that's different and unlike any other union that's ever existed or could even be dreamed of. And this union is a collision with God's union with us. This idea of vowing to somebody to be with them forever comes to us from God because God weds Himself to us and He vows to us that He will be with us forever. Anybody who would be in a relationship with Him through His Son Jesus, He makes that vow to. In the book of Ezekiel, chapter 16, God says this to His people, I made my vow to you and entered into a covenant with you, declares the Lord God, and you became mine. I declared, till death and forever do I part, you are mine. I wish I really would have understood the significance of a sacred oath, of a vow in the context of marriage when I got married. I got married 20-some years ago, and I didn't really understand the depth of it. Libby and I were obviously needed to figure out what our vows are. You're supposed to do that, so I thought, when you got married. You get married, you get vows, and that's all. It's kind of a tradition. You kind of do that. I didn't understand the gravity of it. And so we were going to do our own vows, or at least I thought we were going to do our own vows, but we had a little bit of tension over whether or not that should happen or not, and I thought that she didn't want to do her own vows, that instead we were going to do the repeat after me vows. Well, I get to the wedding day, and I'm in the little room where I and the groomsmen are, we're hanging out, and my pastor slash boss, because I was on staff at this church, comes into the room and says, hey, do you want as a backup me to keep for you the vows that you've written for Libby? And I said, no, I didn't write any vows. We're doing the repeat after me. So I didn't write my. He said, well, I have Libby's vows here. She wrote her vows for you. Said she did. What do you know? Communication problems. Everybody thinks that their communication problems are unique to you. No, let me tell you, Libby and I had communication problems. We were dating, and we have communication problems. I said, she wrote her vows? I said, yeah, she did. Do you want to just use hers? I said, no, I'm not going to use hers. That's ridiculous. I said, you know what? I think I can remember some of the things I was thinking about saying. I'm thinking to myself, I speak before groups of people all the time. I'll be fine. That's fine. No worries. Are you sure? That's fine. Yeah. So we go down to the center of the aisle, waiting for her to come down. She comes down, and I'm going to give my vows first. So I say very confidently, Libby, I love you, and I promise to always love you because I love you. And I will love you. I said something like that, and then I was done. And then she pulled out her little piece of paper for her little notes, and then it unfurled and kind of went all the way down and hit to the ground. And she started reading, Brian, I vow to, she goes on these beautiful, amazing vows. Every sentence that vow goes on, or that oath happens, I simultaneously think two things. Number one, it's amazing that I have a woman, or I'm going to have a woman, that is vowing these things to me. It's beautiful. And number two, I am a freaking loser. I am an utter loser. This is awful. I'm just sinking lower and lower and lower. God gives us a vow and says, man, I'm with you. I proclaim it. I make a covenant. And then he goes on and says this, Ezekiel 16, for thus says the Lord, I will deal with you as you have done, you who have despised the oath and breaking the covenant. Yet I'll remember my covenant with you in the days of your youth, and I will establish for you an everlasting covenant. He says, you've despised the oath. You've despised your vow. You've walked away, but I go nowhere. I am standing firm. I am right here, right now. Yes, in extreme situations, divorce is the best option, such as physical abuse. But I'll tell you what, God always wants, he is asking for people to mirror the commitment that he has to us, to one another, and that is we wanted to follow our vow. What happens when a man and a woman say a vow? They say a vow in front of people, and then that night at the honeymoon, they have sex. Why is that important? I've heard people say, well, you know, it's so pressuresome, that whole ceremony. You don't have to have sex your honeymoon night. Just wait the next day. Who are you? Are you a eunuch or something like that? How could you possibly say that is the stupidest idea I ever heard of? Not just because sex is fun, even if you're tired, but also because, this is important, understand, the consummation of the wedding union in intercourse is what consummates the marriage. You vowed it, but when you enter a woman, when your husband enters you, you are one flesh, and physically this mirrors that you are no longer two separate people who are together. You are one. The power of the marriage ceremony happens on the wedding night because you are now one. And see, when we're married, God looks at us and he sees we're not two people who are maintaining their identity in a joint partnership. It's not two people who are trying to bring out the best in one another as individuals. No, he says, you are one. I don't see you as two different. I see you as one entity in the same way that I am joining myself and I'm one with you. That's why the Catholic Church has the annulment process. We have some of us in here are Catholics. You're doing the secret double dipping on this weekend. And some of us, I've heard some of us in here refer to ourselves as recovering Catholics. Unfortunately, there's some of us in here who are bitter anti-Catholics. Cincinnati, just, man, the Catholic thing goes through, in and out, all it is. It's an interesting thing. I learned how to learn when I came to Cincinnati. Just let me help you understand a little piece of Catholic theology you may not have understood. Catholic theologians are trying to be true to the scriptures when they have an annulment process. What an annulment process recognizes is that whosoever God has joined together, let no man put asunder. You might have heard that before at a wedding ceremony. And what that's saying is these people are one for God and you cannot tear them apart. Even if they leave one another, to God's eyes, they are absolutely one. And so what Catholic theology is trying to do with the annulment process is say, well, perhaps if they're divorced, perhaps initially there never was a marriage. Maybe there was never a marriage. The intent there is to reconcile the fact that we just like to, you know, eliminate our marriages like somebody eliminates a business partnership, but you can. It's holy. It's transcendent. It's of an utterly different category. God says in the book of Jeremiah this, If a man divorces his wife and she goes from him and becomes another man's wife, will he return to her? Would not that land be greatly polluted? You've played the whore with many lovers, and would you return to me? Declares the Lord. See, God understands what it's like. Some of us are thinking, man, Brian, you don't understand, man. My marriage is hard. It is difficult. I may not understand because I don't know your marriage, but God understands. Why does God understand? He understands what it's like to be in a difficult marriage because he's married to you. He understands that. He's married to Brian Tome. He's married to me. He understands what difficult marriage is. He says to people who are wedded to him, he said, you play the whore. You play the whore. You go out and run around on me. You know there's things I don't like, and yet you do it anyway. You look for your justification, your bank accounts. You look for, you do things that take advantage of it. You play the whore, and yet here I am. Here I am faithful to you. So God understands fully what it's like to be linked with somebody who is dishonoring them, and yet he fulfills his vow, he fulfills his oath, he stands tall, and he invites us to collide with his values and to show the beauty of his weddedness by retaining our weddedness with the person we made a public oath, a vow, till death do us part. Marriage is holy, and it's hard. Just admit it, marriage is hard. Everyone's going, yeah, yes it is. It's hard because you're wedded with somebody and there is a place where there's collisions that happen that you won't have happen when you're only dating or if you're only in a joint partnership in business. Marriage is hard for three reasons. Number one, it mirrors who the Father is. It mirrors God. It's hard for God to be wedded to a people that are rebellious, wedded to a people that forget his goodness. And similarly, it's hard to be wedded to somebody and be like God when what they do affects you. It's difficult. You're in a marriage and all of a sudden what that person does, it affects you. When you're dating, it doesn't affect you like it does. Or if you're with somebody in a business venture, their actions affect you. But man, when you're married and somebody goes off the deep end, they do something in and of their own self. They're a spinning top out there and it affects you. It bumps into you. And we're forced to be like the Father who has that happen to him as well. Malachi 3, chapter 16, God says this, 2:16. He says, I hate divorce, says the Lord God of Israel. He doesn't say, I hate people who have been divorced. He says, I hate divorce. What does he mean by this? He means, I know what it's like for people to leave me. When people leave me and go their way, there is a severing, there is a division. I'm hurt and I hate it. I hate when there is divorce because it doesn't model my value of faithfulness. And I know there's pain and there's angst and there's difficulty. And God says, I felt that. I personally felt the pain and the rejection of my people who made a vow to me, who forget me from day to day. It's difficult. Second reason why marriage is hard is it magnifies our faults. It magnifies our faults. Sometimes we're dating, and I said, well, I'm just talking with married people who are on the verge of or considering a divorce, but here's a little tip for those who are dating. Hey, the person you're dating, you think that maybe when you get married, that thing that's bothering you is going to go away? All the married people are laughing right now. No, it gets worse. It gets worse. You think she's a little possessive right now, a little bit jealous, but that's just because she doesn't have the security of being married. No. When you get married, she's going to get more possessive. She's going to get more jealous, more psycho than she is right now. And actually, she may even be justified because now you're actually hers. You are one. I mean, that thing that it's going to be amped up. You think, well, he's got a little bit of a temper right now, but that's just because he hasn't settled down in marriage yet. I mean, once you get married, I mean, that's going to get, no. He will get more angry because you will make him even more mad than you do right now. You will actually see things in him that you hadn't seen before. Marriage is like a pressure cooker. You're together, you're rubbing against one another, and there's intense anger will happen even more. You think, well, there's kind of some financial issues, but when you get married, that'll all be, no. It will get worse. It'll get worse. The angst over who's spending what. You can't control your finances now. It'll be harder then. Marriage magnifies all of these things. It always has in every culture, in every time period. That's why one person you may know from history, his name is Socrates. Socrates actually said this. He said, by all means, marry. If you get a good wife, you'll become happy. If you get a bad one, you'll become a philosopher. Also known as Socrates, I think some people refer to him as. But see, this is normal to have a hard and difficult situation no matter who you are, no matter what your values are, how smart you are, where you are in any time period. This is true. Marriage is hard, and part of it is because it magnifies faults, and it's hard because it mandates forgiveness. It mandates forgiveness. And we don't like to forgive. And I'm not talking the kind of forgiveness that we think is a nice forgiveness. When somebody recognizes they're wrong, they come to us, they ask for forgiveness, they do all the right. That kind of forgiveness is easy. It's kind of also actually makes us feel justified. Good, you recognize it, you came to me, and so there I'm in a position of power. Yeah, I forgive you. And that's a wonderful kind of forgiveness on both accounts. It really is. But the kind of forgiveness that is mandated in marriage is the kind of forgiveness that God gives me most of the time. It's the kind of forgiveness where he forgives me when I don't even know I've done anything wrong, or I don't even ask for forgiveness. God forgives me even if I don't go through some official prayer of repentance. He gives forgiveness. He does. There's things that you and I have done that bother him or that have offended him that we don't even know about. And he releases it. That's what forgiveness means. It means to let go, to release. Even if you and I don't say anything, and marriage mandates that kind of forgiveness, to just wait for the other person to say the right thing and do it, it's fruitless. It normally doesn't happen. Hebrews chapter 13, 5, God says this. He says, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. Have you ever said to your husband, I will never leave you? You ever said to your wife, I will never leave you, I will never forsake you? Most of us have never said that since our wedding ceremony. And partly because we think, oh, you might take advantage of me. I need to kind of keep some sort of veiled, hidden threat. Not just say it, just keep it to myself. And man, that marriages don't thrive that way. They thrive on forgiveness. What is God saying when he says, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you? He's not just pointing to his value of faithfulness. He's also pointing to his ability to forgive. When our kids would, when they were younger, they would go over to a friend's house, and maybe their friend's parents were just going through a separation, or maybe they went to a friend's house, and mom and dad were in different residences, and they would come back when they were smaller, confused, trying to figure out what this means, how does this work, and also a little bit afraid that this could happen to their mom and dad. So Liv and I would see this happening, and we'd have to say to them, hey, look, you don't need to worry. I will never leave your mother. Your mother and I will never get a divorce. They would say to them, I will never leave Daddy, never. We are never going to have a divorce. Have you ever been able to that confidently say that to your kids if you have kids? Because God very confidently says that to his children, you and I. He says, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. And it's not because I can say it to him because, hey, look, I'm a person who has great intestinal fortitude. My word is my bond. You know, I always do what I say. No, it's not that. It's that I am committed to forgive. I'm committed to have an attitude of forgiveness. Marriage is hard, but divorce is actually harder. Is that, oh, man, there you go. Yeah, it's actually... I have, there's the amen corner, and then there's the divorcee front row right here. Yes, it is hard. It is. There is a severing. There is a division of it. It's hard. I tell you, the number one thing, so I just show the number one thing you can do to get ahead financially, stay married. Stay married. The number one thing you can do to protect your heart and give your kids, if you've got kids, a healthy understanding of love is stay married. The number one thing you can do for your Christmases, your holidays, is stay married. Because right now we think, man, my life would just be so easy if I just kind of went through this and eliminated this. There might be some immediate relief in some areas, but boy, the complications are going to go on forever and ever. You think holidays are hard now. You wait to what they're going to be like in 3 years, 5 years. You think marriages and going to wedding ceremonies are difficult now. You wait till what's going to happen when your kids get married. I'm not trying to rule by fear here, like be afraid of divorce. I'm not. I'm just saying we don't think this on the front end. We think everything's going to get easier, and it doesn't. It's harder. I remember when I was younger and a little less understanding of some of these things, I'd interact with people who were going through a separation. And I remember one friend of mine, I said, you know what, I just realized that I need to leave my wife because I looked at my kids and I just realized I can't have my kids grow up in a home where they can't see their mom and dad loving each other. And when I realized that I was going to put my kids through that, that's when I realized I needed to divorce my wife. First time I heard that, I thought, boy, that almost sounds altruistic. Boy, what a big person you are. Out of love for my kids, I need to break my vow. Out of love for my kids, I need to take the easy route right now. That's true what's being said, but it doesn't sound that way. Hey, have you ever considered how your kids would interpret that decision? Have you ever considered what might happen in the long-term fruitfulness of your life if we took on God's values of saying, man, I'm not feeling it right now. Maybe God's not feeling it all the time with us. But yet he stays. He stays. He says, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. It's an amazing, loving thing to give our kids a picture of what faithfulness looks like because they can see when things are difficult, yet we're there. It's an amazing thing to set people up and society up with what an enduring commitment looks like as other people make commitments, as our kids make commitments. John Gottman, I believe, is the greatest researcher right now on marriage. As far as I know, he's not a follower of Jesus nor a Bible reader. I think he's Jewish based on the yarmulke. But just for perspective, he doesn't have some spiritual axe to grind. In fact, in his research, he treats heterosexual male couples the same as gay and lesbian committed partners. And he looks at all of this research, and he and his wife research thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. And he says, of the thousands of divorced couples that we've interacted with, there's about 10 irreconcilable differences they have. About 10. And with the thousands and thousands of happy, stable marriages that we've looked at, he says, there's about 10 irreconcilable differences. The number of irreconcilable differences is exactly the same with marriages that have ended and marriages that are still going together. Hey, Libby and I have irreconcilable differences. We do. There are things that we still can't get over. There's things I can't believe. And actually, at 20-some years, there's a lot of things I'm like, dude, that's just not going to change. And I'm sure she's going, There are irreconcilable differences. But one of the things that we can reconcile ourselves to with God is to say, man, I will reconcile myself to the value of faithfulness and fulfilling my vow and finding joy in that. I love marriage. I love being with Libby. There's amazing upsides. I love it, love it, love it. Yes, marriage is hard, but it is beautiful and wonderful, even in the midst of irreconcilable differences. What marriages need are helpers. Marriage needs helpers. Marriage is holy, marriage is hard, and marriage needs helpers. In the book of Genesis, God goes and creates all things, and first day, he creates light, and he says, it's good. Creates water, it's good. Creates land, it's good, it's all good. Creeping thing is good, flying thing is good, it's good, it's good. Day six, he creates Adam and silence. You can hear crickets. He looks at man and goes, And then he goes and creates Eve and he looks at man and woman together in marriage. He says, it's good, it's good, it's all good. And actually, the name he says for Adam, there was no helpmate suitable. So he makes Eve for Adam a helpmate. This is not to say that women are the personal secretary of their husbands. It means that women bring something to the man that the man also brings to the wife. I'm a helpmate of Libby. She's a helpmate of me. Meaning, we both bring things that complete one another. We both bring things to the table, which is actually part of why marriage is hard. Because you have people who are good at different things, have different abilities. Therefore, they're different, so we complement one another, we help one another, but yet it's also the thing that makes things difficult because we're not carbon copy. When I started to understand, this is only the last couple of years, unfortunately, I didn't figure this out the last couple of years. I'm not perfect at it, but I'm trying to grow in this. When I really wrestle with the ramification of this, I notice that, yes, I want to help Libby grow as she wants to help me grow. We should all be growing as a result of our marriage. But at the same time, there's certain things that I just shouldn't expect her to grow in, because she doesn't have to grow in them, because she has me. And there's certain things that I don't have to grow in because I have her. An easy, non-vulnerable example. I don't need to grow Libby in her ability to figure out how to buy a car, how to get Kelley Blue Book values, go to Consumer Reports, do Craigslist, and I don't need to grow her in that. So long as I'm around, she won't have, yes, include you in the process, get your ideas, but no, I got that one. I got that one covered. And there's numerous day-to-day things that she just has covered for me. And this is why it's a blessing. There's things that I just don't have to get proficient in. And there's things that she doesn't have to get proficient either. Marriage, we help each other. We do things that the other one can't do. And not only does marriage need helpers in terms of spouses to spouses, but friends to their married friends. Whether you're single or married, let me tell you, your friends who are married, they need helpers. Are we being the help we can to the people who we know who are married? You know, there are, obviously, I said it before, I'll say it again, there are extreme examples and biblical examples where divorce is an option, very extreme. And there are extreme examples when amputation is necessary and healthy. There are extreme situations. But all of us know that if we went to an orthopedic surgeon and we said, man, my knee is just, oh, give me the saw. Bring me the saw over here. We would all know that if a surgeon's first tool was a saw, we would say, man, you're just not helpful. And yet many of us, when we interact with our married friends who are having difficulties or struggles, or perhaps somebody's spouse left for the night or this or that, we immediately go, well, dump them. You don't need them. Get rid of them. They'll find out how much they miss you. They'll never find anybody else like you. It's like we immediately go for the saw. Cut them off. Get rid of them. I just want to be one person to say, man, you're not being a good friend. You're actually making a more fun, vitriolic, negative conversation in the moment, because sometimes those negative conversations where we beat up on somebody is fun. You're making for a fun conversation, getting your stomach acid rumbling, but you're really not helping anybody and definitely not helping them. You're really not. There's something powerful about when somebody sticks to it, and if you can encourage and help your friend do that any way possible, they may loop back around and thank you for it. Their spouse may loop back around and thank you for it. Their kids, their future kids may loop back around and thank you for it. Not long ago, I had a good friend of mine call me, and he said, hey, Brian, I just talked with my wife. I'll call her Betsy, even though her real name is Sharon. And I just talked with Betsy, and she says she wants a divorce. She's leaving me, so I just moved out. I guess I'm done. And I don't remember all of what I said to him, but it was something like, "Hey, it doesn't have to be over. Go back and say you're sorry. Go back and take responsibility for whatever it is. Go back and just stand there and fight for your marriage." Don't take no for an answer right now. Go back and re-engage. Maybe she didn't mean what she said. Maybe she's having a bad day. Maybe she didn't mean what she said. Well, just go. Don't bail that. Just go back. He went back and talked with him a couple days later and said, man, I don't know what was going on, but I think we're in a good spot and we're working on it, and I think we're gonna be fine. And then he said this. He said, you know, if I had a friend like you several years ago, I'd still be married to my first wife. I said, all my friends told me, oh, she'll never find another one like you. Let her go. You know, and he said, man, friends, be a helper to your friends who are in marriages. Be the one that goes for therapy before they go to the bone saw. Enable them to fight therapy. There's another one. So many people say, oh man, I can't do marriage counseling. It costs so much money. Do you know how much your divorce is going to cost you? The $100 an hour is peanuts or whatever it is. Really, be a friend. Maybe you won't pay for it as a friend. I'm just asking you, fight for it. God says to us, never will I leave you. Never will I forsake you. I love you. I'm committed to you. I've made an eternal vow to you. God says your vow is going to end when you die. My vow is not going to end. Never. It will go on forever and ever and ever. Because that's who I am. It's my character. I'm the faithful one. God, I pray that you would help us to not just appreciate your character, but appreciate the character that we could have. To appreciate the spouse that we have in the same way that you appreciate the spouses that you have. That's us as flawed individuals who do play the whore. Who do look out after our own stuff and don't think of you nearly as often as we should. Thanks for being in a category and a class unto yourself. Thank you for being a forgiving, faithful spouse. Amen.